I'll forget the first moment when I walked into a cinema. I was hooked from there on.
Hello and welcome to the 65th Scannon Podcast, so we're eligible for retirement.
Good.
One week to go.
I'm heading down to the post office right after this.
A week to go, we get the free transport.
I am too old for this shit.
We've always said so.
Thanks, Philip. Thanks.
It's good to be back.
It's welcome back, Philip.
Thank you.
That's me the same.
You're back to four once more.
I like it, a rhyme, and just in time.
Oh, what a crime. Anyway.
Right. What's the next line?
We're wasting time!
Darren.
Cool. What did I watch? Okay, well, I watched two things. So, first thing I watched was American Sniper, Mooney Family Movie Night.
Have you seen it before?
You're a family.
What's the most mainstream film that we can possibly watch?
This week?
It gets better. Wait until you hear what the second one was.
But first things
first. American Sniper, which is very, very middle of the road.
It is.
It is incredibly middle of the road. And it's really odd how consciously it tries to be, like, apolitical, as much as a movie about a man who goes to the Middle East and snipes at people can be apolitical.
The end of it is decidedly not apolitical.
It's like, let's pull it back here. It's like
Eastwood is battling against the script he's been given. He's trying to steer a little bit away from politics to tell the story.
He's a Republican.
He's a moderate. He's very much pro-gun control.
And
it's
a weird thing.
Like, if you compare the film to the anecdotes from the book upon which it is based...
Oh, it's much tamer.
It's much tamer. It strips out a lot of the stuff that's sort of like, you know...
Less references to savages, things like that.
There are still several references to savages.
Yeah.
It's just less. Lone Survivor, actually, if you're going down the whole book...
Jingoistic,
Mother of God.
You read the book, haven't you?
Yeah.
But see, the thing, I didn't mind American Sniper.
Yeah.
There's been, like, and this is a faint praise, there's been worse. I mean, you think of something like Good Kill or...
Lone
Survivor being
Ruth Irish.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, it, as far as American Sniper goes, whatever, the politics aren't as heavy-handed as we feel.
As you would imagine.
But as a film goes, it is quite middle of the road.
It's
more from Eastwood.
Yeah,
it's Cooper, Miller, and Eastwood that save it.
How did Cooper get a nomination for it?
He's not bad.
I agree.
The voting academy is 6+ white guys.
Yeah.
It's okay.
But they didn't nominate Eastwood for director.
Yeah, which is interesting,
isn't it?
Because it's not a very good film.
I think his direction is one of the things that keeps it memorable.
Script is more the problem. Like you said at the time, it's surprisingly conventional.
Yeah. Very, very. That's what I was hoping it would be a bit more, a bit louder, and a bit messier. And it's
battle scenes aren't bad. It's just again the home stuff.
The home stuff the home stuff is your cliche sort of war is tough.
I've seen it a million times.
Yeah. It's telling nothing new.
Well, give it to Sienna Miller though. She does.
She's
better than anybody else in it.
She's very.
And I think there were hints of something sort of slightly subversive in the fact that it toned down the biography, which included stuff like wrestling with Jesse Ventura and sort of shooting at looters in New Orleans and stuff like that, which understandably got kind of written out.
I would love to have seen what Spielberg was on, because he was attached originally.
Really?
Yeah.
I think you needed somebody with a sort of darker persuasion to get into the meat of it, to make it a more interesting and messier film.
Any nominee?
Spike Lee. Can you imagine
Spike Lee's war film? I do not need another Miracle at St. Anna, thank you very much.
Fincher. I would like to see it. Fincher, too stylized.
I think Fincher's too detached.
He is. I mean,
like, if you were worried about not being as it was shot by Eastwood, I think like Fincher with steady cam and distance and stuff.
Yeah, which we love about him, but not for this. I don't want to see the
Catherine Bigelow. Screw it.
Just do it again. This is your niche now. But I do think there was something subversive in that, and that taking this all-American macho icon and basically saying, actually, even all-American macho icons who claim to like to shoot things like
they're going to
have
PTSD.
They have PTSD, which
they don't really in this though. I mean, it's PTSD, but it's not really. It's
very bare bones cliche.
It's like a couple of conversations that were done.
You kind of imagine the guy who wrote the book going, Yeah. That didn't happen to me. Yeah. That's not what happened to me.
At the rate this is going, I really can't wait to hear what you watch next.
The second Mooney Family movie night, The Full Monty.
Oh, God.
I like it, but as a family watch? Oh, yeah, it's great, because my little sister hadn't seen it.
I like it. It's fun, but...
Yeah, no, this was like trying to pick something that everybody could agree on. There's nothing in it.
Aside from the Arsenal offside trap.
Yeah. Which is the best rhythm, best trick ever. No, I like it. I really like it too.
I forgot how,
for a 90s film, it's very conscious, it's very... Like, it's very interested in sort of machismo and sort of...
It's that moment where they're queuing up and they just start...
And they do the dance, But I mean, even the bit where they're talking about, like, they're looking at the models and they're, you know, they're going, okay, well, you know, we're going to be naked as well. It's like, they're not going to objectify us. I mean, we're blokes. and sort of the wonderful, the idea that, you know...
Anyone can be objectified.
Yeah, a bunch of macho steel workers, yeah, somehow coming to the realization that, yeah, people have body issues and people... You know, that there is that.
There's Mark Addy wrapping himself in
Clingfilm.
It's quite sad in its way.
I think there's a sadness to the film. There's an underlying kind of...
Well, of course, I mean, it's meant to have been emasculated, losing their job and whatever else.
But I mean, like,
that's what it's all about.
Yeah, and the tragedy of it is, like, this idea that you pretend to be more than you are. Like, Tom Wilkinson pretending to his wife that he's still got a job for 6 months. Like, having her make lunch... And go out in his suit when he's actually just going to the job centre. And then the bit where it turns out actually she was perfectly okay. She would have been perfectly okay if he just told her. Like it was just he couldn't.
There's a great scene where they watch Flashdance. Yeah. I thought about the welding and not really dancing. I love that.
Her mix is all wrong. That one's
dancing. She's a welder. Which always made me laugh.
I really liked it. And Robert Carlyle is like that. Had his most charming
of an ending as well. It's a great ending. It perfectly keep going.
No, into, like,
you could easily have an epilogue with this.
Yeah, with sort of the schmaltzy soap opera, like everybody lives happily ever after.
The whole film threatens schmaltz, but it keeps just the right side.
Oh, it does.
Likeable for that.
Yeah. And I think it's aged very well. I would argue it's much better than Billy Elliot, for example. If we're talking gender roles in working class Britain films.
They're probably the same for her, but I like both films. Yeah. But probably The Full Monty is the definitive example.
Okay. I would agree.
So that's me.
What?
Jay?
What? No, that's seven films there?
Well, I can keep going if you want.
No.
Okay.
No.
Stop now.
I've got three. We'll start with Begin Again.
John Carney.
Yes.
Haven't seen this. Heard this isn't
great. It's okay.
It's inoffensive.
It is inoffensive.
Absolutely adored in Korea, where it's the top grossing foreign film ever.
Really?
How
does that break out? Yeah.
No,
I love facts like this. Really?
Phenomenally.
You've seen it?
I've seen it, yeah.
Okay. It's fine. It's like...
it's weird.
I don't get it.
I have an aversion to Keira Knightley.
Ouch.
I cannot help it. You can see her acting in her eyes all the way, and she really acts very hard.
But she acts, I appreciate that she tries. Like,
yeah, but you really should be that up.
I think that's unnecessarily harsh. I can't agree.
My ex-girlfriend used to describe it as her scrunchy face, which is her acting face.
Yeah, and through this, she's a singer in this, and of sorts. Who, you know,
swords. Yes.
Well, in fairness, Holly Valance was a singer in Taken.
But you're implying she's an actress.
She's probably no worse an actress than
I
one has been in the Academy Award.
Yeah, listen to anybody.
You need to rewatch Pride and Prejudice or Atonement.
She is not very good. In general,
I think
occasionally
she's
better than that.
I think she's good, but the problem is it generally comes down to the kind of stuff she picks. The Pirates of the Caribbean movies are not going to test anybody.
I love that.
But I mean, come on, in fairness.
Stop it, Jesus.
Mulch.
Ruffalo is fine. Ruffalo does his Ruffalo thing.
Like, I'm a little sleazy, but I'm safe.
Yeah.
I get the feeling that these roles aren't exactly challenging to anybody either.
This film thinks it's a street cred indie kind of thing, where it's a safe studio,
schmaltzy
thing wrapped around indie music in inverted commas,
like,
and how to create
indie music.
Indie music
is the most hipster concept of it. Like, let's listen to the world, man.
Yeah. Let's record an album in the street with musicians on the road, because that's what real music is.
It's just
you play the music and it's the most middle of the road indie by numbers.
It's a studio who saw once got John Carter and said, do it again, except for
bankable stars.
And it's not nearly as good as once.
No.
It's nowhere near as good.
Stay tuned for Podcast Extra when Jay leads our jam solo, our jam session.
We record entirely in pubs. It's completely different.
Yeah, yeah, we're going to pretend to be indie pub. We might be our indie podcast. Shit, we're hipsters.
No! It happened so slowly, I didn't realise. Now let me get my hemp bag. And
the one thing I say is this:
all of us have beards.
So there is some.
No, but they made
the beard. Yeah,
if you're going for a hipster podcast, this is the way to go.
Anyway, there's a weird structure to the film, if you've seen it. Like, the first half an hour, 40 minutes, has this kind of back-and-forth structure whereby the film goes, like, you know, they bring a character at the point, then they go off another character, like, say, yesterday, and bring it back to that point, so you see where they all meet. And then it just abruptly abandons it. No, it's like, how can we make this as less boring a section?
But no, well, I think it's really more odd to get to the opening shot. Like, opening shot is like, because it's from the director of Once, so you need to let people know that it's a film about music.
So
how do you do it? You open with a musical performance, and then...
And it's just the musical performance is a start. Like,
I'm sorry.
Oh, no, it's not.
Inside
it's not
Llewyn
good.
Davis is about a guy who's a musician, right? And it does not feel the same need.
No, I know. I'm not saying it's a good need. I'm not saying it's a need that makes a better film. I'm saying it's a need.
Because it doesn't.
No, it doesn't. I'm saying it's a need that's perfectly understandable given the mandate was do once but make money.
We should have called it twice.
Yeah.
Hey! Turbo could have been three times a lady.
Hey!
The Commodore's biopic, at last!
anyway, enough said, it's not very good. Pleasant enough to watch, but very forgettable.
So tell us about something that might
feathers,
be.
Yeah?
Oh. He won't be watching it lately.
That's a winner.
Top that. Alright, I get on something else. I'm looking forward to this one. Jurassic World.
All yours, Jay. You have the floor, but please, if you're not with me on this, I'm done.
The third highest
grossing. Hold on, you said that as if I'm not with you, and Niall's kind of with you.
The third highest grossing film of all time.
As opposed to Avatar.
Alright.
Avatar is significantly better than Jurassic World.
Yes. Even at Avatar level.
I am a fan.
Well, you have to give
it up. But it's raging bull compared to Jurassic World. Like, if... The first 15-20 minutes, it's like, okay.
There's prompts.
Well, I can get here. It's okay. It's a new night. We're on. Send it up, so on and so forth. Chris Pratt, please make him look like Indiana Jones. Look at him. Look at him. He has a motorway. Look at him. Look at him. Stop it, lads. He's not going to happen. Right.
Oh, he's already happened.
It's so happening.
But it's a bad idea because he ain't no Harrison Ford.
True.
As simple as that.
Harrison Ford is no Harrison Ford anymore.
Yeah, but Harrison Ford's
a good guy. What do you want?
Harrison Ford in his prime was fantastic. And correct.
Take that, Chris.
Chris Pratt is very likable on screen.
I cannot see him building characters.
I can't either.
I see him playing Chris Pratt.
Yeah, and that's fine, because Chris Pratt's a likable presence. But beyond that...
Yeah, but Chris Pratt, Dino Wrangler. Yeah, I don't like.
Oh, but Dino Whisperer.
No, this is where the problem starts.
New age Navy SEAL.
You're my boy, Blue.
He's like a new age Navy SEAL.
That's where the problem starts, right there. It's like
train Velociraptor.
Okay,
the first problem is they arrive at the park. They check into their Hilton suite and they look out over the magnificent CGI vista.
Yeah.
And the music comes up.
The theme.
The music came up when they opened the gate King Kong style in the original. Come on.
That's when you start to build suspense. You save
but
the
Niall,
team for when you get to the dinosaurs.
The absolute fatal mistake in this film. The absolute fatal mistake. And it continues it. Like, it doesn't even know it's a fatal mistake all the way through. It's the callback to the original film.
Yeah.
Because
the original's a fetish object.
Whatever you do, don't remind people there's a better dinosaur film.
If I watch Jurassic Park, I'll watch Jurassic Park.
It has no identity of its own at all. It cribs from 101 other films.
And now, when I was going through it, the what's the actress' name?
Bryce Dallas Howard.
with a nothing part. God help her, she's stuck.
But can she run in heels?
Oh, God.
All of the women.
Yeah, but she in particular, I actually think she does quite well, considering what she's saddled with.
Yeah, she, I mean, she tries.
I mean, they give her newer all the time, and she loses her suit because she's not an executive anymore. Because she could become a mother!
How could she forget her nephew's birthday?
But she kisses the guy as well, like, to completely undermine her, sort of.
But no,
but they established they had a thing. They had one date.
The central point of the film is that dozens of people die because Bryce Dallas Howard is a worse mother than Chris Pratt.
Yeah.
That's the central theme of the film.
And I'm not saying I'll forgive all that. I was taking that, right? I was getting to a point where I think to myself, right, the worst of it's over. It's like,
it just keeps going. And
then
they
find the bloody things from Jurassic Park, the
Jeeps.
And I was like, oh God, no, they're not doing this, are they?
They did.
And then... Can I even say? You can't say.
Have you ever tried to start your car after you've laid it up for a year?
After 20 years?
It's in our tires after 20 years!
There are dinosaurs. I think we can allow.
And then
everyone, the soldiers, has the same heartbeat. All the patterns. For the everything one has the same heartbeat pattern.
There's your screensaver right there.
So essentially what they do then, as far as I can see, and correct me if I'm wrong, is that they do a Terminator 2.
How do you mean?
In the context of... Arnie being a bad guy and then a good guy.
Yes. Oh, they can't decide who the Velociraptors are.
Yeah, and
but I mean, also the other thing.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
He's like, he's the hero now.
It's unforgiven for a character who is very important in the first Jurassic Park film, except there's no setup for it.
It's absurd, because I was like, really? I actually was in hysterics.
Yeah.
I couldn't. I was like, was what they had left in the tank, and he went this way.
But I mean, like, you knew that's where it was going.
But then I was thinking, maybe they have more respect for themselves.
We need more teeth. Come on, you know where this is going.
My problem with it is not that it's pandering nostalgia, because like,
it's juggling nostalgia.
But it's not set up at all. Like, it goes out of nowhere.
But it's like they're picking hats out of hat.
And they buy, 20 years later, they buy flares from the same company, apparently, that manufactured flares from the original.
Oh, makes sense.
And wouldn't that company have gone out of business, considering?
This is not
what happened.
Like, this is not milking the nostalgic teat. This is killing the nostalgic cow.
This should not have made it.
But you also have the problem where you've established that the little kid, Ty Simpkins,
is
a genius.
He's a genius.
And his great idea.
Halfway through, you conflict us.
No.
He has one good idea.
That's the problem, though. The climax relies on his idea, right?
Yeah.
Despite the fact that Bryce Dallas Howard, runs the park. her character...
In high heels.
Yeah, but her character... but
still, it's a valid point.
She has an understanding of how the park works, so it's obviously the film feels like it should be building to a point where her knowledge leads to a resolution that keeps everybody alive. But no, she needs her 8-year-old nephew.
Yeah.
So this way you have kids, Bryce.
Yeah, because they can give better decisions.
Also, why, when she needed to call back to the head office, did she have to make a call from her car? Could she not make it from the pen before she sent any guys in? Did she not go, where is the Indominus Rex?
Yeah. You might want to turn the tracking on.
It's absolutely absurd. It's actually, I generally try not to go see really bad films.
This
is one of the worst blockbusters I've seen in quite some time. In years.
It is abysmal.
It's abysmal. It's absolutely abysmal.
See Terminator Genesis. It's...
I'm not a massive fan of Terminator films, but I don't think I've got to do it. That smile in your face.
This is bad enough.
This is dreadful.
You've earned a lot of brownie points somewhere.
It's a dreadful film.
Jurassic World made a billion times more than a film that is better than it, Tomorrowland. Tomorrowland is a better film.
Everything
is a better film.
Oh, it has significant issues as well.
It's Iran the movie.
Yes.
It's Atlas didn't just shrug. He sort of.
I hate Ayn Rand. I hate Atlas Shrugged. But I still enjoy Tomorrowland. Quite a bit, and because it's got tech nostalgia, and I like that sort of stuff. But
this is the problem where it's all the films this year. They're the big
nostalgia
ones, preying on nostalgia. And I'm not saying our nostalgia because I don't do nostalgia. I'm not susceptible to it. It's cheap. It is so goddamn cheap.
Yeah.
Minions.
I enjoyed Jurassic World while I was watching it, but then I got away from it. Oh my dear God!
I just wanted to leave.
I can only imagine how much I'll hate it a week from now because, as I was like, it's dreadful. It's absolutely dreadful. Not that universal care. I don't care what I think.
Somewhere a red light's going off.
I've compiled a list on Letterboxd on my review of it of the things I hate in it. So besides Bryce Dallas Howard's bare bones characterization, the sexism of it, Chris Pratt's lazy characterization, the fact that there's no original ideas in it. What else we have?
We'll just drop that one in there.
Yeah. The shameless product placement, the militarizing subplot.
The product placement's meta, though. So that's
it's all meta. Nostalgia is meta.
I'm not meta.
It's a postmodern nostalgia.
It's awful. The
bland kids, the way he said bland kids get put in peril for our sympathy, the ways to Judy Greer, the scary new dinosaur that isn't scary.
Ant-Man, by the way.
And
the idea that raptors can be trained, the fact that Howard can somehow run from a huge dinosaur in those heels, Jake Johnson being annoying, etc., etc., etc.
The dinosaur is very old. You just didn't see the Zimmer frame on camera.
It's a god-awful film. I really want to move on before I smash something.
Major Jurassic Park 3 looked good. That's how bad we're talking.
Ugh. It's actually ruined the whole franchise. I have zero interest in going back and watching Jurassic Park. That's how bad much I...
I need to rewatch Jurassic Park just to remind me that this thing can be done well.
It does feature the line, though, if only we'd had these boys in Tora Bora.
Oh, that was the point where I just thought, no! No movie, you go to bed without supper! Evil! No! Sorry.
How does weaponizing velociraptors work? Do you just parachute them in?
You drop them in. How do you
clean them up?
No, wait. How do they stay on your side? How do they know who everybody is? Yeah.
Also, we had that kind of thing where they change sides. Yeah. It's ludicrous.
But also, yeah, velociraptors talking with other dinosaurs, because that worked so well in Jurassic Park 3.
I'll put this in context. There was a Russian plot during World War II to strap bombs to dogs to walk under enemy tanks.
Yeah.
The dogs kept walking under Russian tanks because they were the ones they were trained with.
Yeah.
This is how stupid we're talking.
Yeah,
they did train dolphins to disarm.
To assassinate the president of the United States.
Kirk Douglas in The Day of the Dolphin.
Okay. Brilliant. But less spoofy, they actually did train them to disarm mines in Vietnam. Was it Canberra Bay?
Yeah, no, that's true. Okay. But the thing... No,
smarter
the
than Jurassic
dogs,
World,
the
isn't
the dogs
it?
Is true
Everything
as well.
Is smart
and it worked
Jurassic
fine,
World.
But yeah, the Russian tanks have round tops, British and American tanks have square tops, and so they went under the round tops.
I just don't understand.
Can we stop talking about Jurassic World? I'm depressed now.
Sorry.
What else you got, Jay?
This will dovetail nicely into you, Philip. 7. I had to watch it last night. It's like, you know, 20th anniversary.
There's a film out later, right? And I'm
always
called Solace that started out life as a sequel to 7 called 8 with the G replaced
by an 8.
By an 8.
Oh.
Ah. Yeah. Uncle Fincher.
They see the imagery, but
Uncle Fincher told them to
where
to
see
the desist to get out.
Yeah. 7 was great.
He said 9.
We do.
Come on, I like it. See, I like it when you get a board.
I'm not on board, I saw an opportunity, I thought I'd better take it.
I didn't hate it.
Oh, yeah, no, okay. Let's
okay,
move on.
Fine.
7, yes.
Classic.
As good as ever, hasn't aged.
It really hasn't, which is quite impressive.
It's my second favourite feature
kind of
film.
Of its time, so I don't think it's...
I still have Zodiac up top, but it's a shade behind it. Like,
yeah.
I mean...
That's probably
it's
the best
glorious.
Non-Sizzle-Land serial killer film of the 90s serial killer boom.
Yeah, I mean, that boom that Silence of the Lambs just seemed to jumpstart, and then after all those... Ones
Morgan Freeman hunts serial killers.
Ashley Judd.
Yeah.
But
there should have been more of them, because there's about 30 books in his sequel.
There shouldn't have been
more
of them.
Oh, in the Alex Cross?
Yeah.
No.
Well, don't worry, Tyler Perry will take care of that.
Yeah,
for
but
you.
All of those...
Tyler Perry turned that.
Yeah, but out of, you know, all those... novel that you could have adapted, but here's this original script by Andrew Kevin
Walker.
That's
the strength of the film in some way. Fincher's direction is brilliant, but it's a perfectly constructed screenplay.
It's a great schlocky idea, given
but,
so much heft and so much intelligence.
Yeah. And it's a puzzle box perfectly constructed to fit and finish exactly where it finishes.
Yeah.
It's great because
beautiful.
It
it's
gives
a beautiful
you,
piece.
I mean, seven, saying seven murders, it gives you a great structure.
Yeah,
and
gives
you're
the
going
seven
along.
Days, like, you know,
yeah.
starts
yeah.
with that structure.
It
well.
Gives you the identifiable characters, maybe unwrote, but then plays
oh,
enough
trunk,
with
but
them.
But the actors invest a lot of it.
Brad Pitt, Morgan Freeman.
And I argue that's the quality of it. Like, it's an archetypal, like, grim serial. Like, it's filmed in Seattle, although it's never named as Seattle. Yeah. It's just a grungy city.
No, it does. It does have that. But it takes that and does something with it.
No.
It spins on the very well-worn kind of characterization.
Like, there's a wonderful bit where they're at the apartment and he arrives, and, like, it seems like Brad Pitt follows him through half the city without setting foot outdoors. And it's just a wonderful kind of illustration of sort of the urban environment as, you know,
as just being that urban and big and grey and falling apart. It only stops raining in the final act.
Yeah. And that's because they go to the desert.
Yeah.
And which is so much more full of life.
Somebody just call somebody.
Someone called someone. That as one of the last lines. Yeah. When you have a police officer who can see everything and he's just left gassed.
And the shots.
And just saying, somebody call somebody.
And I love that, but I really love, and I kind of forget this every time I watch it, bizarrely, and I've seen it a good few times then.
Yeah.
You know when Pitt is kind of agonising over whether to kill John Doe again? That subliminal
spoiler.
Shot.
It's a little Fincher thing he does.
It's just like, and it made his mind up, that's it, it's beautifully done. And you could easily drag that over there 30 seconds and have a lazy way of doing the same thing, but just like, done.
It makes sense, doesn't it?
Yeah, great.
It's like a little thing with the appearances of Tyler Durden in Fight Club. Same idea.
Yeah. I don't rate Fight Club as the years go by as highly as I used to rate it.
Still Fight Club has sort of been tainted by the way that a culture is sort of built up around it.
No, that's it. Like, but that the film fails a little bit. It's more than... I would have been a 5-star on Fight Club when I saw it when it came out.
Yeah.
It's a 3.5 to 4-star.
Wow, that's a fairly significant...
Yeah, but that's fine though. The 7 and...
I think it's as you grow up when you look back...
Yeah.
Social Network
is higher than... Fight Club, for example.
Maybe
third for me.
Might even be first for me.
Ooh.
Oh, it's
Social Network.
Social Network is probably first for me.
Oh, so definitely. Never tired.
I have to say.
Yeah.
Social Network is
bloody good. It is.
I love Social Network. I absolutely love it.
I'm glad you said this dovetails into my choice, because I rewatched Seven last night as well.
I know, but you gave me the idea.
Well, like I said, this is the...
Were you guys in Seventh Heaven?
Yes. Uh-huh. I absolutely was, because... as we're recording, it was the 20th anniversary of Seven this week, and that was when I saw it first. I was too young to see it in cinema, but first time I saw it, I taped it off TV and I watched it afterwards, and it just completely took my breath away. I couldn't believe what I was watching, and the fact that they could have a film with such big stars in it and to have something this dark and nasty. And unrepentantly so.
And getting Spacey in, but it was known.
Well,
thankfully, it was pre-proper
internet spoiler culture.
Yeah.
But he also omitted his name from the opening credits. In return, his name is listed first at the end of the film.
Yeah, that's right.
But it made sense to him, because apart from getting out of him to do publicity, if you have his name on the poster, you're going to be watching out for him. When he doesn't appear, you're going to put two into the
camera. Well, Interstellar tried to do that, Matt Damon.
And they kind of did if you weren't on the internet, but if you were on the internet, it was ruined.
I think that's just indicative of the age we're in, really, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
Sad in its way. But it was a formative watch for me.
No, it is. It's fantastic.
It's pretty fun.
I remember watching... That's one of my late 90s midweek movie things. Like, remember when Ortiz midweek movie, before the age of DVD,
Ortiz were pretty good at not cutting as well.
I think it's an Irish philosophy, though. I think, like, particularly our classification board and stuff like that, we don't tend to...
We try not to cut.
Back in the day...
Oh, no, obviously,
but
certainly,
the last X amount of years we've been pretty good.
Yeah. It's
horrible to much better than British channels, for example.
Yes.
Mm. Well, actually, I tip this off BBC, incidentally enough.
Oh, okay.
Now, BBC 2 would be okay.
Yeah.
ITV,
as I recall.
ITV were pretty...
Tend to butcher it to fit your
advertising slots.
Everything
away,
yeah.
They absolutely do.
But,
although apparently now they just speed the footage up.
Oh, okay.
This is the wonders of modern television. So your shot isn't removed, it's just ruined.
I never watch it on TV anyway.
But you're absolutely right about one thing, is how little it has aged. Apart from the fact that there are no mobile phones, people still use beepers, and somebody actually uses the library.
Yeah.
But that gives you the wonderful sequence with the music.
Yeah, it's great.
With the Bach.
Yeah, it's great.
And that's a piece that could so easily have just been played in the background as a cliche.
Yeah.
But they make it into the heartbeat of the scene.
That's Fincher as music director. Like, Fincher, like, as a director, like, I think his use of camera and film as an instrument of itself, as opposed to, say, characters or actors. Like, I think he works much better.
Yeah.
As a way to get over a bad debut, it doesn't get much better than that, does it?
Yeah, I don't think he was to blame for his bad debut.
No. I mean,
I think he learns a lot from that, though.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
I think that's the thing. It's a great film school. an absolute failure. It is.
Well, have you seen the Assembly cut?
I like it. I'm not as down on Alien 3 as a lot of people are. Okay. I quite like it. Okay. I just
it's not aliens.
What?
Don't mention that
film,
my name.
I didn't.
Don't.
But there's three sequels coming. Come on, everybody.
But there maybe an intermediate Alien directed by Neil Blomkamp.
I would shoot myself watching any of them.
That has promise.
Yeah.
But I couldn't put it past him to screw it up.
I don't know if it has promise. But because
it has Sigourney Weaver.
Neil Blomkamp had the... wow, did he have a calling card, and then wow, did he manage
to screw that up. Elysium is not good.
If you...
And then
Chappie.
Haven't seen
haven't
it.
Watched it. Haven't had the heart to watch it. I'll just kind of re-watch Short Circuit instead.
Tell me what you re-watch. If you want to ruin your childhood memories of a film that is absolutely abhorrent, Battery's not included.
Wasn't a massive fan of when
Battery's not included.
Was that a Spielberg produced thing? Was that?
It's got all the feeling of it was one,
but not directed by him, if I remember correctly. Yeah. It's an Amblin film. I remember that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway,
sorry,
we've gone down quite a tangent there.
Yeah,
and so that was all of my recent watches. And before that, I wasn't here last week, and I wasn't here the week before. And that first week was because I was away in Venice at the Venice Film Festival. Yeah, thank you, much appreciated.
Do you see any Studio Canal films? We barely noticed you were gondola.
Very nice.
I've been saving these up.
The Cornetto trilogy?
No, because you imagine Gondola Baby Gondola is an entirely different
film. Yeah.
Oh, I like Gondola Baby Gondola. That's good. Very nice.
Go on.
It's a beautiful city, but more importantly, for our purposes, I got to see a few quite interesting films, and some of them very good indeed. I'll just pick out a few. Particular shout out. First of all, 11 Minutes, the Jerzy Skolimowski film,
yes.
Irish co-production,
which is just 11 minutes long.
That would have been interesting, but no.
Wouldn't it?
In fact, it'll be right up your alley, Jay, because it's only 88 minutes long.
Oh, that's obviously good.
It's a mile a minute thriller. It's great. I really enjoyed it. More than some critics, I will point out, but I feel that as thrillers go, you've got to write a good philosophy on these. You know, keep it relatively simple.
Lean, I mean, and get it out.
And this has a lot of little stories, relatively lean as they are, and it brings them together slowly but surely. It's like, I don't want to make comparisons to anything like Magnolia, but it's got that kind of structure.
It's kind of 8 minute kind of.
It's something like that.
It's
a
multi-threaded narrative.
I don't mind either. But I mean, if it's done well.
And I think this is done well. Some people seem to disagree, but I loved it. I enjoyed it. And I remember it at the press screening that morning, and it got quite a few whoops and cheers at the end. So,
I'll take your word for it. I'll see it.
Another notable watch, Bigger Splash, the Luca Guadagnino film, is follow-up to I Am Love with Tilda Swinton and Ralph Fiennes, who are lovely people, by the way. Very charming at the press conference.
Mm.
Rubbing it in now.
Mighty fine people, if you will.
Hey! Yeah. Until the day I die, I'm a fan. Very enjoyable kind of Patricia Highsmith aping look at romance and lack of communication in Southern Europe as Ray Fiennes' music producer goes to see an ex who's a rock star played by Tilda Swinton who's just undergone surgery and can't speak
because she is a rock star.
She is.
So this has got a before type feel to it, yeah?
No, definitely not.
Being in Southern Europe and
romance.
No, it's like I say, it's got more of a Patricia Highsmith feel. It's almost like a murder mystery in its way. It's got a very off-kilter tone. You're not quite sure where it's going. On the one hand, there's kind of underlying emotions and mysteries and who's exactly with who or who's doing what to who. But at the same time, it's also got a lightness of touch. There's a very memorable scene in which Fiennes does a dance. He just dances around this villa to the strains of Emotional Rescue by the Rolling Stones.
Yeah.
Well, how well it fits is arguable, but it's an absolute joy to watch all the same. It seems to divide critics at Venice, but I really enjoyed it.
I wasn't gone on I Am Love. I liked it to some degree, but I wasn't wild about it.
No, I prefer this to I Am Love, even though it has some of the... I think it handles the shifts in tones a little better than I Am Love.
Okay.
But, I'd say give it a watch and see what you think. It's out here in February. And last one I'm going to mention, just because it was easily the best thing I saw at it, and I know Jay is really
keen on it. I know what you're going to talk about.
Anomalisa.
Oh, I cannot wait.
The new one from Charlie Kaufman.
That may be my most anticipated film at all.
And rightly so. It's wonderful. is really, really wonderful. This is Charlie Kaufman's co-directing. He's co-directing this with Duke Johnson. It's a stop-motion animation. It's a very simple setup. It's about a man, a character voiced by David Thewlis, who arrives at a hotel for a conference. But he's having a bit of a problem in that all the characters around him, they all sound the same. They all have the same voice. And he can't quite understand
Tom
why.
Noon. Tom Noon
does that voice. And it's great because he never changes his voice.
He's got a great voice. Any character. I like his voice.
Yeah. Yes. But then he meets somebody who has a different voice all of a sudden, and the whole world is turned upside down. And the wonderful thing about it is, even though it is a stop-motion animation, it rarely ever succumbs to, you know, going all out on the visuals. It plays it relatively straight. It's like saying, yeah, this is animation, but with the emotions involved, we're dealing with stuff for grown-ups. This is for grown-ups.
Did you see Miramax?
Miriamax, I still haven't, but I will.
You really should. As a kind of,
I suspect
this reminds me a lot of it. Just to talk about it. Now,
yeah,
kind of different story completely, but just, and particularly with its claymation. So it is a glorious and heartbreaking thing, and I think you'd love it if you like that. And I cannot wait for this.
All right then, I'll watch Miriamax, and you better get your ticket now for Anomalisa.
You know it.
So does that mean that Inside Out may not win Best Animated Feature?
Anomalisa is the bet for me. It's easily in my top five of the year.
Wow. Ooh. And to be honest with you, Pixar, so far, enough Oscars. Let's somebody else win for a change.
I wouldn't object. I wouldn't mind if Inside Out won.
No, I like Anomalisa Inside Out a lot. So.
Me too. Oh. But Anomalisa is better. As I say,
I haven't even seen
for
it
now,
and I hope it wins because I love Charlie Kaufman.
But yeah, a lot of fun was had.
Excellent.
By me.
Excellent.
I'm going to mention one because I need to move on.
Is it Guardians of the Galaxy?
It is not Guardians of the Galaxy.
We're over that now.
I rewatched Winter Soldier, but I'm not talking about that. it is. I think I may have rewatched Guardians of the Galaxy as well.
And you just lose track.
Yeah.
Oh, get on with it.
It's The World Is Not Enough.
Ooh.
That's such a perfect place to start, my love.
Yeah.
But if you're strong enough.
It's the second Robbie Carlyle film of the week.
Yeah, what are we on? And some might say the stronger. Nobody says the stronger. Nobody says
it's
Renard.
It's not a bad villain. It's just he's second place more.
The problem, like, it starts out, it has a very clever central premise, which is sort of like it's trying to do Honor Majesty's Secret Service again, which is this idea of Bond as a romantic type. Who, you know, actually has an attraction to another person and has to deal with the fact that he's a hired killer. Like, he starts the film damaged, and he continues to be damaged for most of it, physically and emotionally.
Yeah.
But then, halfway through,
he feels responsible for the death of her father at the very start.
Yeah, and he also has
which
the
leads
cast
into the longest opening sequence
of any
fine sequence. It is.
It was originally supposed to be just a scene in Switzerland, I believe, but they extended it because it didn't have punch. Right?
Yeah, because the test audiences saw it and they were like, "No, you need to."
No, you need to figure the one where he drives the boat underwater.
Yeah,
but the problem is that
was only discovered when they actually started filming. That the boat would go underwater.
Oh, okay, yeah, I love that. That
whatever way of combination of the throttle would dip the nose and it would go underneath. So that, it was just
I love the idea of sort of Pierce Brosnan rehearsing with it and being like, oh, I got this. I know what
stunt
we're doing.
Double. Oh, no, there's a very obvious stunt double sequence. Yeah. You know the way in the start of Golden Eye, you're like, oh, well, yeah, it's
fair enough. He's jumping off a dam.
Yeah, but this is the one where he jumps in down to the submarine in Istanbul and it's back at the guy. Guy falls in, top of a guy's head from the back. Then, here's Brosnan. From the front.
It's a very much a mid-tier, at best, Bond.
Well, it's
got some great things. Right,
it's got
M in peril. Right, so you have something for him to
personal statement.
Yeah, you have something that he's worried about in the background. You have a femme fatale who's
Sophie Marceau,
who's actually quite good,
and it's very clever because she starts out as the Bond girl and then becomes the Bond villain, which is a very clever structural twist on a Bond film.
But you have the worst Bond girl of all,
Denise Richards as a nuclear scientist,
as Christmas Jones,
Dr. Christmas Jones, who's named Christmas Jones, which is the last line and is the worst pun in any Bond movie, and
I think it's right up there with
he's attempting re-entry. They're the two. Yeah,
I like that one.
I do too. At least it's funny.
I thought Christmas only comes once a year.
That's Austin Powers, isn't that?
Yeah,
it's not Bond. Not wrong with that either.
But I mean, I thought
Gary V.
The problem is that, problem is that it starts out being very clever, and then it introduces Christmas Jones, and it becomes a lot less clever and a lot less insightful. And you have like Robert Carlyle, who's suddenly elevated from like quirky henchman with like physical disability to, well, he's a bloke, right? So he gets to be the Bond villain.
Yeah,
and he actually would have been a good Bond villain if they, you know, maybe developed him a bit more and given him his own film.
No, instead. he needs to be a henchman.
He needs to be a henchman. Yeah.
So you could have had Robbie Coltrane as the evil sort of Blofeld stand-in if you needed to, but even
like keeping Sophie Marceau would have been a good idea if you'd been willing to follow that through to its logical conclusion and not like undercut her by providing a girl with whom Bond can sleep with at the end.
Well, that's true, but you also have the nice moment where Bond just gets fed up with listening to her
and shoots her. Yeah.
Which I mean,
then sort of leans over her body in a not at all creepy fashion. It does.
That might have been more poignant again if there'd been more emotional.
And M warns him earlier on that you know that he's there to protect her, to walk behind her or stand in front of her, not on top of her.
Yeah. But also, these the great line, which is like, and I think Pierce Brosnan doesn't get enough credit for this as Bond, the fact that he could alternate between goofy Roger Moore and sociopathic Timothy Dalton.
Yeah.
But the bit where he's like, you know, where she's like, "You couldn't shoot me, James. You would miss me."
Bang.
And then he's like, "I never miss." Yeah.
Bang.
It's a potentially great moment, but it's undercut by the rest of the film's problems. Yeah. Another problem with it just goes on too long.
It peters out well before the end. It is far too long. But there's good stuff in there.
There's a lot of great, interesting ideas.
If you lost almost all of
Denise Richards' scenes,
then you'd be...
You should have a far shorter film.
You wouldn't actually have that much shorter a film, would you? Because she's only introduced around the...
The only bit you need is the minecart scene.
Yeah.
And you don't need her to be there.
Yeah. But she's only introduced about two-thirds of the way through, when it becomes clear that Bond's not going to be sleeping with Sophie Marceau at the end.
Oh, dear.
What a shame. Keep in mind, Pierce Brosnan's Bond. The Bond who dropped a satellite on his best friend, threw an OAP into a shredder, and shot an unarmed woman at point-blank range.
And destroyed the Kremlin with a tank.
Yeah.
My favourite Bond. He is my favourite Bond.
I love Brosnan.
He's the best Bond.
I feel really sad when he does interviews, and he's like, "I don't think I was a good Bond." And you're like, "Just give me a hug,
you were fantastic."
Oh, yeah.
You weren't the greatest of films in general.
Your scripts were not great.
But you were great.
But he was
and
good
you had Lee Tamahori, you poor man.
True. Anyway, shall we move on?
Yes, we should move on to the news, and we'll start with the news. Philip tried to say it earlier, but then moved on. 11 Minutes, which Philip watched at Venice, is Poland's entry for Best Foreign Language Film. So, 11 Minutes is an Irish co-production. So, Element Pictures here are co-producing it. Like they did with Essential Killing,
Jerzy Skolimowski's
last film. Yes. So this means that Ireland has two dogs in the race.
With Viva as well.
Yeah, which we mentioned last week. So Viva, Paddy Bratnock's Viva, which is a Spanish language. Well,
none of them in Irish.
Drama.
But hey.
But it's a strange thing, isn't it?
Does it not speak to modern Ireland now? Yes, we have a Polish.
We live in a post-national era.
It's a bad
He says a year before 1916.
Yeah, our politics does not say it.
That's good. It's odd. That's all.
Isn't it?
I feel sorry for you on Klondike, lads.
Denmark has picked its as well, and it is not. Is not the look science.
Of course not. What is it? Piece of crap.
I can't remember. I only saw that earlier.
Yeah, I didn't think it was like Look of Silence.
I'm guessing it wasn't that Suzanne Beer film.
No, it's a guy directing, shockingly. It's A War.
Tobias Linton, which I unfortunately missed, Hijacking.
Do you want to hear the maddest one of all? France did not pick Dépin, right?
Dépin's not supposed to be really good.
Instead of picking Mustang, which is doing
a Turkish language,
it's in Turkish.
That's a strange one for France.
I don't know. France can come out some really weird choices. I'm still not over the fact that
the other one that will really, the other ones that will really troll you is Israel picked a film in Persian.
God,
yes. This is like Eurovision.
It is. No, it's the Celine Dion. China
picked Jean-Jacques Annaud, who they previously banned 7 years in Tibet by him, and they picked Wolf Totem as their
12 points.
This is going to be very strange.
Yeah, it's a Son of Saul's to lose, but it's...
You would think so.
Never say die.
Well, we have the assassin is Taiwan.
It's all bets are off, eh?
Hoping to see both at London next month.
Yeah,
I bet you will.
It's a strong, strong year. And it's not finished yet because we don't have all of the submissions in yet. They're nearly there. They all have to be submitted before the 30th of September. But okay.
Keep an eye on that.
Last year was the record. This year could beat it. There's some like new countries that have never submitted before, like Uruguay or Paraguay, who had never submitted before, and they have. So
nice.
It's cool. It's great. It's great to see that the International Film Foreign Language doing so robustly.
We have two possible contenders.
Good. Yeah. Although we'll steal Poland's thunder, won't we? we won Poland. Sorry.
We produce better Polish films.
It's nice that we have two dogs in the race for best foreign language film, but we have a dog in the race for best film.
Yeah.
Yeah. Lenny Abramson's Room won a TIFF. And
the Audience Award.
The Audience Award at TIFF.
Very prestigious.
People's Choice Awards at TIFF. That is...
it's a good sign.
Yes, because from the last 7 years, six of the films have gone on to be Oscar nominated. Three of them have gone on to win.
Best Picture.
Yeah. So
12 Years a Slave.
It's a proper
American
show.
Beauty. No, a lot of big names.
Yep, it's...
the field is wide open, isn't it?
It's not a real shot at a nomination, certainly. I mean...
Brie Larson seems to be all for a lot of
anywhere between 5 and 10.
Yeah.
9 seems to be the sort of sweet spot because getting a 10th one is quite awkward in terms of how the voting works. But, Brie is a front runner but it's a very strong year for leading females as well.
Cate Blanchett's going to give her a lot of competition.
Yeah,
and of course Meryl Streep's going to be in there.
No, she's not. No.
You don't think she's going to be in there?
She's not. No.
For what? Ricky and the Flash.
Suffragette.
Supporting.
Saoirse Ronan has a chance as well. So you have. It's going to be interesting. What would be absolutely fantastic? Lenny for Best Director, Room for Best Picture, Saoirse Ronan for Best Actress, Michael Fassbender for Best Actor. And we sweep it.
The Irish Oscars. I'm going to put a damper.
Not at all nationalistic, are we?
Manage our expectations a little bit.
No, but I'm saying in the best possible scenario.
And it's great that it's actually.
No, it is. That it's
been a few years since we've actually had proper discussions about
an Irish film.
I know Oscars have to be on end, though, but still, as a barometer for how. Our film has seen worldwide, it hasn't been time, and it's only the last couple of years that's kind of...
And as much as we complain about the Oscars, we talk about them incessantly. Yeah. Even to complain about them.
Sure, stay up and watch them.
Yeah.
I'm only talking about this because the rest of you are doing
it. That's pack of...
Yeah. No, but if you're
it's
a film producer,
gold medal
that's
of
it,
film
that's
production.
What you want.
Yeah, it's the Olympic gold medal.
Yes, the Room does well. Like, I mean, Lenny Abramson gets bigger projects, so on. All feeds in.
Elements get to do, because they have a first look deal with Lenny. Yeah. They get to be involved in...
It's all good.
Well, I look forward to hopefully seeing Room as well.
Yeah, make Room on your slate.
Also, Room is going to play at the Savannah Film Festival, which is chosen by the Savannah College of Art and Design. They've announced a number of them. Youth is going to play there as well, and Carol and a few others, and Brooklyn. So there's
what
two.
What is Savannah? Like, is in
Savannah, Georgia.
It's hardly the most prestigious.
No, but
I don't know. Is it?
Ouch. Yeah,
Georgia,
give it a chance.
Georgia is a big film making area because Georgia has a tax credit.
Well, it's been on my mind a bit anyway. So.
Yeah. But if you take the midnight train, you can.
Very nice though.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah, I do. No, but Georgia is a big film producing area because it has a tax credit, and so there's no films are made.
So you're saying even the devil could go down to
the southern, the Seattle of the south.
I'm
basically.
Saying that if you do it right, you can have a peach on your hands, and then.
All right, stop.
Yes. Oh, mercy. I do believe I'm getting the vibes.
Closer to home, there's a new cinema opening next month in Charlestown.
Nice.
Yes.
Yeah,
so
if I'm stuck in Finglas, I'm sorted. Yeah, the loose end.
Nice. I like that the if. Like,
it's like zombie
apocalypse. Somehow I wake up, you know.
The lovely place, Finglas. Played darts there once. There you go.
If you
pedal back any further, you'll trip.
No, but if you look at a map of where the cinemas are located in Dublin and
central and
predominantly south side. So because you have one in Dundee, you have one in Slorgan, you have one in Dundrum.
Yeah.
So that's
so you got one in Coolock as well, which is my local cinema for many years.
Yeah,
yeah.
But
Blanchard
on the north side you have
Swords.
Swords.
You have Kulak, you have
Blanchestown.
Blanchestown is west.
So, but yeah, so you don't have that. There's a gap there, and so it's great. It's a 9 screens and it'll include an iSense.
Cool.
And yeah, and Dolby Atmos as well in the iSense. So.
Oh, very good.
Good stuff.
And it's creating 65 jobs.
So that's also all great.
All around. That's the new audience in Charleston. Right. So, last week we announced that Liam Neeson was making a new movie called...
The Revenger.
This week
the most Liam Neeson-y named movie ever.
Hang on, it could get worse.
This week we have a new Liam Neeson movie. It's called The Commuter. Yes.
Revenger, The Commuter.
Can we have a moratorium on new Liam Neeson movies?
Just for the next week.
I can't take any more.
I love the
unless
idea.
Unless it's Silence, of course.
Silence is the next one. Actually, the next one is A Christmas Star. And then...
Let's see if we can skip
that. Christmas Star?
Christmas Star is Cinemagic.
Is he playing one of the three
festival,
wise men?
They do a film festival in Belfast. They do a film festival down here. And they got kids to make a film called A Christmas Star. And...
What do you mean, kids?
They got like school children.
And Liam Neeson's a baby.
Liam Neeson is a
baby. He will do anything, won't he?
He's doing that. You say that like it's a bad thing.
He got 10 quid for it.
No.
It's Christmas. And there's children.
He doesn't do anything for charity.
It's Christmas.
He's as mercenary as many of his characters are.
No. He's hacking something.
He's hacking them out.
This is an Irish film.
Oh. How did Gilkey spin that back for his...
He's the narrator of this film.
Yeah.
So then after that,
I'm feeling cynical.
Take that, kids. Yeah.
No,
you're stealing my act.
I'm waiting for Jay to review. To review A Christmas.
I'm gonna review that. Head out of that.
Yeah. It looks like it was directed by a 10-year-old
and written by an 8-year-old. Yeah. Several 8-year-olds.
Neeson miscast as himself.
No, so unconvincing.
I'm sure it'd be great.
So the thing about The Commuter is it's the money men behind Nonstop and Unknown.
Of course.
And there's a great pedigree if ever there was one.
So they're the ones that are involved, and it has no director yet. So Liam Neeson's role.
Neeson might as well direct
it. Is he on a train?
For all anybody cares.
We know very, very little.
Of course
about
he's on a train.
Apart from the fact that
he's a commuter. Yeah, what?
He's somebody who gets involved in a criminal conspiracy while on his way home from work. This is what happens to him. Right.
I could not care less about
But Liam Neeson's role. Right, is Christmas Star, right? Then Silence.
Thank God.
Then A Monster Calls, so which I'm really looking forward to as well.
Which one is that again?
Monster Calls is the one that Bayona is directing it.
Oh, yeah.
Juan Antonio Bayona.
Oh, okay. Maybe.
It's got Felicity Jones and Toby Kebbell in it.
Oh,
yeah. Okay.
Well, so did Fantastic Four had Toby Kebbell.
Yeah, that's it.
We give Toby Kebbell the pass now. Okay. Players. And right. Then he's got Operation Chromite, which is South. He's playing General Douglas MacArthur. It's a South Korean film.
Does he pick them out of a hat? Because his agent just sent him a joint hat in the film. He's got a Christmas Carol, Northern Ireland, with kids.
It's
is that your Liam Neeson impression?
It's the highest budgeted South Korean film ever.
Oh God, Lee and Chan all over again.
That's because you have to give Neeson $50 million.
Right, okay. Then he's got
Christian Bale as a priest.
Then he's got
that's the Flowers of War.
There, the Flowers.
That's
of
Chinese.
War.
Yes. Then he's got Narco Sub. To Commuter.
Narco Sub sounds amazing. It's like Octo Shark. It's like big people.
Narco Sub, is he falling asleep underwater?
Yeah. Narcotics and submarines. Come on, it's beautiful.
No, I thought he was falling asleep in
Narco Sub is, I mean, you're going to love it. You're going to absolutely adore it. It's Antoine Fuqua.
Oh God.
Come on. Tell me this train.
Is he a substitute teacher?
No.
It's
this is kindergarten.
Produced by Simon Kinberg and Ridley Scott.
Oh, Scott is never free production.
It's about nuclear subterfuge. He is going and recovering nuclear.
Give me back my son.
It's not about submarines. It's about.
I don't care.
I have a very particular set of subs.
Right. Then he's got The Commuter, The Escapist, and The Revenger. Or, as I like to call it, the Dead Trilogy.
The Trilogy, yeah.
I would say that by the Dead. The Noun Trilogy. The Dead Trilogy, except he's probably already done it twice.
The Noun Trilogy.
Stop it, Liam.
Well,
stop it.
Christmas Star will be his Trilogy, because he'll have A Million Ways to Die in the West, A Walk amongst the Tombstones, and Or walking
around. Would you go way out of that?
That's a very tenuous thing. That's another one. Yeah.
What else? Just Jesus.
Just let's move on.
Quite depressing.
Not Neeson season, baby.
Yeah, but he's not doing that. He was originally him and Kenneth Branagh did the pitch for The Journey.
And you ended up with Timothy Spall and Colin Meaney.
Yeah.
There's a jump.
Jeez, that's...
It's great.
When they were trying to sell the film at Cannes, the pitch film had Kenneth Branagh and Liam Neeson in it.
I like that. We need to Timothy Spallify it by about 10%.
I hope that film is good. I really suspect it won't be.
I smell another Charlie, frankly.
Yeah, me too.
And last bit of news is that the Cork Film Festival has announced its shortlist for the shorts that are going to be shown at the Cork Film Festival in October. There's 37 of them.
Neeson is in 15.
They're up on Garscannon. The thing is, Cork, since... this is the first year that the Cork Film Festival is an Oscar qualifying festival. So the short that wins will be put on the Oscar nominees.
Yeah, very nice.
Sadly, not the shortlist.
Move into the top 10.
Into the top 10. And cue depression from Jason as Minions is back.
At
10. Yeah.
It's a weak week.
It is.
Oh, I see what he did there.
I wasn't even going for a pun.
€13,000 was the entry point. That's pretty poor.
You say that as if like the rest of the year has been meager.
But most of the time you need in the mid-20s to 30,000 to get into the top 10. 13 is
This is not great.
As an entry point.
But hey, there's lots of great stuff still in there.
We'll come to that.
At 9... No Escape.
Which describes the audience's experiences with the film.
This is, in its third week, has plummeted 67%.
In any given week, in any normal week, that would be gone from the top 10.
I guess it had a lucky escape. yes.
See, Pierce Brosnan is trying to get in on the Liam Neeson
and a Jerry Action film
and failing miserably. They keep bombing.
It's a pity because I kind of like Brosnan. You know,
that's only because Brosnan didn't have the respectability that Neeson built up over the years. He was always a bomb.
Yeah, he didn't cash it in quite as
what.
He was also Remington Steele.
You shouldn't be living here.
Well, he wasn't Mrs. Doubtfire.
You forget that Christmas watch along.
They better show that again this Christmas. That's the great thing. So much fun. Anyway.
At 8, A Walk in the Woods.
Which I've heard isn't exactly A Walk
possibly
in the Woods.
Possibly the worst trailer I've seen this year, actually.
Based on the Bill Bryson book, isn't it?
Yeah. It looks bad. It looks really bad.
And it is barely
how
made a dent.
Get that cast together and then just make something that
Nick Nolte,
so
Robert
bad.
Redford.
Nolte will do anything for a few quid.
American Hustle.
Yeah. There you go.
This is in with less than 20,000.
Just a horrible top 10.
Yep.
This will be gone next week.
It gets better.
And 7. Pixels.
I gave you bastard 3 weeks to get this out of the charts. 3 weeks.
What's Pixels?
And previews. Don't forget previews. Yeah. So it is currently
727,000.
€750,000.
Incredible.
Yeah, but that's
absolutely
not
credit.
No, but this that's not. It's not that it's done. Because usually, if you get 770 million, you've opened at 300 you've dropped.
No,
if
this is word of mouth.
People are saying go see Pixels.
Pixels.
Yeah.
This just keeps going. This has got a 6-7 times multiplier now, which is unprecedented outside of an animated film.
I was trying to get tickets to go see Mistress America, but the cinema was full. So the nice man at the counter directed me to go see this film called Pixels. And you won't believe it. It's brilliant.
No.
I'm imagining what word of mouth for Pixels must be like.
Do you know, there's a film that's not like the other ones. In any way. You should go and see it.
At 6.
I am, to paraphrase Seinfeld, I am speechless. I am without speech.
At 6.
Go on then.
Is The Visit, the surprisingly not terrible M. Night Shyamalan.
And there's the bar. There's the bar, people. And
it's not as bad as his other ones, you know?
Yeah. It's better than a film he's released in the last 10
almost
years.
A comeback.
Almost.
At Shyamalan's.
But this is basically him just being a... it's a job for hire, though, isn't it?
Yeah, it's Blumhouse. It's a Blumhouse film that just...
That's what you're getting.
Well, look, it's better than a Platinum Dunes film.
But that's not going to happen, because as soon as he puts in another original script and they film it, he's out again in his ear.
Well, hold on, I thought people liked Wayward Pines, and that's not a job for hire.
People just didn't hate it. I don't know if people necessarily
like it. Let's manage expectations here. But no, apparently, yeah, it's not bad, which is, like, because compared to, like, the praise or the
compared to, say, Lady in the Water.
Yeah, it's a masterpiece.
Or The Happening.
Yes.
Or The Last Airbender.
Or Devil.
Yeah.
Or pretty much all of them, Baron Cup.
Everyone except the first two or three.
Yeah. At five, and now we're getting into films that are actually good.
Straight. Don't worry, we'll be leaving that shortly.
Straight Outta Compton.
I liked it a lot. I'm glad it's doing well.
Still haven't seen it. I must do it.
It's good. I liked it.
I'm quite pleased to see it doing so well at the box office. 865,000.
Pretty good. Should get a million kind of comfortably, I would think.
I got to catch up on a few films now in the 7.5-hour flight to Chicago. And
that'll be one.
Straight Outta Compton. No, because
I don't think it's ready for...
Not
thank you yet, is it?
No, it's not. No.
Also, it'd probably be. No, it's not too weird. Maybe it would be cut to bits.
Anyway, I'm not going to pirate it.
That's not what we were suggesting.
No, it's not an airplane.
Oh, Don Airplane, yeah, might well be. Anyway, F4, Inside Out.
Yay! Still here.
Kind of knocking around, doing well.
It's great. Yeah.
Should make 3.5 minutes.
It's like the anti-pixels. It succeeds and it's good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Except I have a horrible feeling 8 weeks from now, pixels will be still here. Slowly climbing towards the number one of the year.
Through attrition. The fallen bodies of, like, Inside Out and whatever lying in its wake. Yeah. And don't worry, then Hotel Transylvania 2 comes out.
Hotel Transylvania 2 comes out next week.
Yeah.
I know, right? Jenny Tarkovsky, I'll still love to always give her a shout.
A Sandler renaissance, if you will.
Stop it.
At 3, Maze Runner, Scorch Trials.
Yeah, not exactly blazing a trail, is it?
Yeah, there we go. It's not an amazing return.
We'll give it a runner for its money.
Yeah. I won't. But anyway.
There's no point in that. Are you saying trial and error?
No, I'm not.
I will watch this when it gets to Netflix. But
there's a ring endorsement.
But The Hunger Games Mockingjay Part 1 is on Netflix now. So, yeah.
That's true.
Actually, yeah.
It's quite a big catch for them.
Yep.
They pretty much get it each year, I think.
It's a great idea to watch it now because, you know...
It's coming out to have it now because... Yeah,
I do mean to do it. I'm just
kind of... Are you hungry for it?
Summon up the enthusiasm.
Yeah, I'm not a big fan of the Hunger Games films. Battle Royale was much better.
I loved the first one, but the second one was a bit of a come down.
It's watching it with Philip Seymour Hoffman as well.
Oh, that's sad. I actually thought the first one was better than the second. Sorry, the second one was better than the first one.
I preferred the first.
Me too. Really impressive. But
Wes Bentley's beard aside.
I didn't like as much as you did at all. I liked it, it was fine, but...
Second one was okay.
The series doesn't really do anything for me.
Yeah. Again, Battle Royale.
Yeah.
Like, let your 12-year-old kid watch Battle Royale. And
I would.
You got all the experience, yeah.
Oh, well.
At 2...
Didn't do me any harm.
Yeah. At 2 is Legend.
I haven't seen this, but partly wants to.
See it for me because I really can't face it.
To vicarious viewing.
Tom Hardy, I mean, he is a fine actor.
He's a great actor.
I think it's a foolhardy idea to get into two parts. I do.
They're Hardy and Hardy.
It's not the two. That's putting me off.
Well, it's one of the things put me off.
I think it's an interesting idea because it has been done well before. But I mean, you know, we're not in Dead Ringer territory here. I know.
Yeah. No. I think we're.
I think my issue is more that it's written and directed by Brian Helgeland, who is can be a fine writer. He won the Oscar for Confidential.
Yeah. He co-wrote
that though. But he has done some schlock in his time as well.
Yeah.
And particularly as a director.
But anyway, it's grand. It's hardly a ringing endorsement.
Hardly a ringing endorsement, did you say?
I will catch it at some point.
It surfaces somewhere. This is Sunday afternoon.
I'll watch it. But I watched The Craze last week. It's always fine.
So you're not crazed about another film?
No, I'm not.
At one.
I'm not acknowledging that.
At one.
Is Everest.
Hitting the heights.
Yeah, right at the summit. I watched it earlier.
I hope it is
very good. Really? Of its ilk.
Okay.
Vertical Limit.
Of that type.
Thanks for reminding me about Vertical Limit. Thank you Vertical Limit is terrible.
It's very well constructed for what it is. You're not tense throughout. It lets the characters build enough that you actually care what happens.
Characters?
There are characters.
Holy heck, we have characters!
The problem is, the reason that you have characters is because the standard of the actor that you have is phenomenal.
It's quite a cast.
Josh Brolin.
Josh Brolin are the two Jake Gyllenhaal main plays guys. Fear. Right, so Jason Clarke is... The entire film is hung on Jason Clarke.
I like Jason Clarke.
It's his story.
And it's great that
I'm missing on Jason Clarke. I
like that Jason Clarke is sort of becoming a star. Like that you can have a big blockbuster that's sort of... Or not a big blockbuster, but a big film that's anchored.
Everest is the star.
I don't mean this in general, but I mean like to the point where you...
I don't know if he's carrying on...
Like,
I think he carries something where it's a spectacle. I don't know if you're going to be carrying a film that's...
I think... I mean, I can see him more as a good supporting character than a star.
I like him though. I like him in something where he's not...
That's a great film, The Apes, obviously, Dark Zero, Dark
Thirty.
I like him. Planet of the Apes not so much, but then again, Stinky Humans no get much respite from better characters. Anyway.
You know what? That wasn't a big
then you have Terminator Genesis. But the thing is, he's the main guy in it, but the main character in it is Everest. The Everest has all sorts of personalities because of it is very much a...
Yeah, a spectacle.
Yeah.
But isn't it
that thing though, isn't it? This year's Gravity. Seeing the big screen is kind of nonsense.
It is something that if you see it on a big screen, it is an amazing...
You take away the big screen.
You take that away. It's got a very by-the-numbers plot based on a true story, so there are beats that you have to hit.
It sounds okay.
How often you can create a spectacle of a film based around a true story. So
it's a live type
touching the void,
but without the cannibalism.
Without the cameras.
We hope.
But there is...
Did you see that film Alive? He was meeting Tony.
I recommend checking out Everest in the cinema because I don't... It'll lose its impact on the smaller screen, but it's still a very well-constructed film for what is... And the original Contraband aside, it's Balthazar Kalermacher's best film.
Again, considering it's the guy who directed Two Guns and Contraband, the remake.
I got about half an hour to Contraband.
Yeah, but this Icelandic version is actually quite good.
Oh, okay.
And I maintain half of Iceland must have been employed in this film, the making of this film, judging by the credits.
All right, fair enough.
Anyway,
I hope anybody wasn't Contraband from set.
Yeah. Then, new releases!
You really reached for that one.
We'll start with 99 Homes, start alphabetically.
Yes, we saw this at the Dublin
Film
Festival.
We did all three of us, actually.
And we...
I didn't.
You didn't.
Myself,
Ronan Doyle was there.
That's who it was, I knew there was somebody else.
Yeah, basically, we saw this, we did not like.
No, this has problems. The
99 of them?
No, it doesn't have 99 problems. Raheem Bahrani, who I do like as a filmmaker, I've only seen one film, is Chop Shop, which I really liked a few years back. And this one has a kind of timely premise.
But it's very heavy-handed.
Oh, it's extreme. Like the idea of kind of people losing their homes and then this kind of
this devil redeveloped.
Which would it be, Michael Shannon or Andrew Garfield? You decide.
Andrew Garfield's first drama in 5 years. First film where he wasn't Spider-Man in 5 years.
Don't worry,
there's going to be a lot more of those.
He's miscast in this. He's not young enough.
But basically, he plays a handyman whose home is repossessed and is sold off to Michael Shannon's character. And so, in an effort to try and buy the house back, he goes up to Shannon and offers his services as a handyman to help him fix them up once they've been repossessed. But as time goes on, he starts to see the error of his ways and see how evil Shannon's character is.
But initially,
I was like, that subplot of We Are Your Friends stretched out to an entire
initially
movie.
Initially, he kind of falls in with it because he's making money. So you get the rise and fall arc, the kind of that classic beat, you know.
Yeah,
initially,
people
he's
like money,
yeah, look, we've money.
People don't
we're
like
get
guilt.
A house, and this is great. And then you know it's all going to be. The character he sees earlier on. You know, go back to him again.
Yeah.
So it's very familiar, very heavy handed,
very
clunky.
And as you say, Garfield, he doesn't quite have the necessary chops for it. He expresses exasperation mostly by having his mouth open.
And Shannon...
Shannon's having a ball. He's having a ball with his role.
He's a Bond villain.
Shannon always has fun.
But he needs to be reined in a little bit for this.
I will find him!
It's a lot of
that. That said, though, Laura Dern's in it, which is always a plus.
Yeah. I wouldn't even say it's watchable, actually. No, I wouldn't recommend it.
Nah,
it's
too heavy-handed. Yeah. Far too heavy-handed, but it's
so it's not a home run.
No, it's not. No.
Then, next, we have A Girl at My Door.
Have you?
Well,
This is a
Julie's debut feature, yeah.
With Duna Bay.
Yes, from Sympathy for Mr. Vengeance and Cloud.
Yes.
I haven't seen it.
All I know of it.
It's opening to IFI this weekend. But yeah, I haven't seen it. I know very, very little about it. I know that it's
South Korean drama that's based
around two women as well.
Yeah, and it was in the Uncertain Regard in Cannes and it got kind of quite well reviewed from what I gather.
Yeah.
So it's probably worth seeing.
It's meant to be a dark and gripping.
Yeah, that's my kind of thing.
So, yeah,
that might be me.
Then we have Life, Anton Corbin.
Now what?
Go ahead, Phil.
Have you seen it?
No, I haven't.
Okay.
Well, but I have strong opinions on it.
Okay. Well, I have.
So do I. Well, I actually don't have strong opinions on it. That's the problem with it.
Okay. Well, yeah. It's a film that I find so ironic. This is directed by Anton Corbijn, who made his name by taking these beautiful photographs of so many musical icons, U2, Springsteen, so on and so forth, and then made a name for himself as a filmmaker with his debut Control, which was a beautiful retelling
still
of
his best
the
one.
Last year. Yeah, you're right. Well, on this evidence, when he told the story of Ian Curtis and
Joy Division.
So it's so strange to find that somebody who's created such beautiful images of modern cultural icons is going to tell a story about the creation of one of the biggest cultural icons of the 20th century, James Dean, and the photos that Dennis Stock took of him. And it's so drab, and it's so dull, and it's so pedestrian.
I've only seen the trailer, but I watched the trailer three times when I was in the FY last week.
Yeah.
And each time I watched it, my heart's sinking with that kind of really this, because this it felt like all there is in the film is this.
Yes.
Yeah.
And it's, this is all it's given me.
Yes.
I want to run away away from it.
The story
is
The story is interesting. The storytelling is not. Robert Pattinson plays a photographer. Yeah.
They're both okay.
Yeah, Dane DeHaan does his best James Dean impression. It starts off a bit gimmicky, but it gets better.
Don't you need an actor for that? An actor. Like, if you're going to portray.
It helps that DeHaan. I mean, that's the main reason he's probably cast, because he looks it.
Yeah, but. I can accept somebody not looking quite like somebody. If they'd be a better actor. It's a personation in some way. DeHaan's
not bad, but the thing is, I struggle to think who else would
play
him.
Yeah, that's probably a fair point.
But
I actually would have been interested in seeing the two leads swap. I thought that would be interesting.
Do you know what? I think DeHaan is as fine as an all right.
Not that they're miscast. They don't fit as they are.
No.
They fit a little.
It seemed very interesting.
Yeah, it'd be interesting.
Shake it up a little.
Yeah.
I could see that making this even less bearable. As it is, I just found so uninteresting.
Yeah.
I was like, okay, we have seen these pictures of James Dean walking around Times Square and that, and the black and white and the rain. Like, they're beautiful photographs.
Iconic.
And they're classics.
Yeah.
Yeah, iconic, as you say. The film does nothing to demonstrate why that is, or it's just, look, James Dean, they tried to make him a star, but he was just too cool and interesting and a little bit of a little boy lost.
Isn't it terrible how Hollywood crushed this little boy who just wanted to do good acting. He actually
says
that
in the trailer.
He says that in the film. I just want to do good acting. And you're like,
no wonder you don't want to take a chance on you.
I want to act well. I'm sorry.
The film is, it's so cliche, and particularly because Stock is portrayed as your Stock. As your Stock predatory, photographer stealing your soul.
Because he's
desperate,
because he's a divorcee, trying to support his young son,
and
blah.
Why does everybody have to have motive? Why can't he just be taking the goddamn photos?
But I mean, why does the motive have to be one-dimensional?
Yeah.
And why does it have to be,
sinister.
Boneheaded.
Why does it have to be, this is the Crayola version of history? Why can't it be, look, this is an interesting character. Who has, motivations that are more than what you read in, a two-page story.
It's a Cliff Notes summation. And it's so weird because this one photo of James Dean walking along Times Square in the rain can evoke so much more interest and thought than the whole of life.
Without spoiling anything, the closing credits include the original shots. And you're like, where was that during the film? You're like, because they are iconic, and you can see why they caught on, even without the context of Rebel Without a Cause.
I'm not a massive fan of Corbin's films post-Control. I didn't particularly like The American.
I do.
I really like The American.
I think it has real problems. I thought Most Wanted Man was okay.
That's mostly down to Hoffman.
Yeah, that's mostly
the cast.
And
The city, yeah. Even though it's not very appealingly shot, it's
but no, but
quite
that's the point. Too. Like it's a John Le Carré adaptation. Yeah. It's meant to be gritty and ugly.
Yeah, but not in any kind of interesting way, like Tinker Taylor.
Yeah,
I agree with you. I could take a leave of films, and I'm by the sounds of it, I'm going to leave it.
I would say because of this film so far, even I mean, I say I like the American, but by any measure, I think this is the weakest.
Yeah.
Oh, Jesus,
for a film called Life, it's very lifeless.
Yeah, exactly.
Put that in the poster.
Yeah. I don't think they will.
No, you won't
see it. Anyway, moving on. Nanni Moretti's Mia Madre.
This has been getting some good notices. Nanni Moretti, though, is a filmmaker kind of very safe. I put Nanni Moretti alongside like Francois Ozon, but they can make some challenging, potentially challenging
Ozon
stuff.
Ozon, they can take or leave, certainly.
Yeah, but
Moretti won the Palme d'Or.
The Sun's Room, wasn't it?
Yeah. Sun's Room was a good while ago.
I do remember liking that film. I can't for the life of me remember a hell of a lot more than exactly.
The last one I can recall that Moretti making was that one about the Pope, Habemus Papam. That was a few years ago.
Yeah.
But
well, this has got John Turturro in it, hasn't it?
I saw the trailer for it again. It just looks drab.
The story is in it, but the main character is played by Margarita Bai, who's a director.
Called Margarita.
Yeah, plays a director who's coping with the death of her mother. And, yeah, I mean, it could be fine, but again, Moretti, a lot of Moretti stuff, I can take it or leave it.
Me too.
Cool. On to Miss You Already, which is getting quite good notices from a number of places. Yeah, Catherine Hardwick.
Is that a direct thing?
Yeah. Drew Barrymore, Tony Collette, so
Paddy Considine.
Yeah. Dominic. Yeah.
I saw a trailer for Miss You Already in the cinema, and I just thought, okay, I'm out. It's just Beaches 2.0. Don't need that.
There is a feel of Beaches about it already.
Oh, it's not a feel. It's the same basic plot.
As far as cancer.
Cancer
movies,
sucks. Dumb movies.
Cancer movies become a genre now. Yeah. Like the dying.
Like dying kid. Yeah, like the intersection.
Jesus,
it's much better than
me. Dying mother.
It's better than me and Earl and the Dying Girl. Like it's grand. Like Colette is great because Colette is always great.
We love Colette.
Barrymore is solid. She works very
well. Yeah.
And she works great with Colette. Cooper is there.
Considine there, I'm guessing.
Is there. Like,
it's not there. It's
he's
the two leads.
He's quite often wasted in films.
Yes. And he's not really well used here either.
You don't know how to use him half the time in films.
But it goes through every single stock beat you can imagine. And like there are points when it sort of works, but it sort of works because Colette is very good. But then it immediately gets back to, oh yeah, this is what we're supposed to be doing because this is a film about. I find it interesting how when you're making a film about something like a terminal cancer, like terminal cancer or something like that, you impose a structure on it, which is odd because as an experience, it's not something that has. Like it obviously has a logical endpoint, but you don't have a pattern that you can follow.
No.
And I sort of wonder if
that would make the process a bit easier.
Yeah, and I kind of wonder if there is something to the rigid structure that you impose in these films, attempt to sort of psychologically say,
We're controlling this.
Like, you know what you're going to get. This is an experience that is akin to a terrible experience for anybody to go
through.
But it should not be mistaken for one. Yeah, but it's controlled,
It's a safer alternative.
Which is a pity, considering Hardwick has done some very interesting stuff in the past.
Yeah.
Written by Morwenna Banks, interestingly enough. This feels like a real mishmash of influences and people.
It's not bad for what it is.
Maybe.
It's not bad for what it is.
Okay.
That sounds like an over-reluctant qualifier.
That is a very reluctant qualifier. I've seen enough cancer
films.
I've seen worse films about this. Yeah, about this subject.
Yeah.
I'm not a big fan of the cancer genre.
Would you believe
I'm not a fan myself?
Yeah.
Then, first, Irish film of the week. Older Than Ireland, the documentary.
This is from the makers of
The Irish Pub.
Oh, The Irish Pub.
Yeah, Ice Fagan, who directed that Irish Pub.
I was missing it for
this
the Irish
Pub. This is played at the Flat, where it went down very, very well. It is basically the story of centurions, you know, people who are 100 years old and who are essentially
centurions.
Older than Ireland.
It does sound like a Michael Fassbender film, doesn't it?
I'm
Brian,
so is
my
wife.
Centenarians,
there we go, yes.
I'm sorry, my bad.
I like centurions.
We didn't want to point
centurions
it out.
Centurions is
Nautius Maximus.
No, it's the cartoon from the 80s.
Sorry.
Anyway. Yeah, yes. So essentially, it's it's charting the stories of a number of people of who are older than the country in which they live.
They're older than the state.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. It seems like an apt time. Again, that 1916 thing.
Also, isn't the state technically 1949?
Yes, that was the declaration. Don't let's get pedantic.
Gerrymandering to get my granddad in there.
But we have the oldest one, who is the 113-year-old Catherine Schnabel, and then you have down to like 108 Luke Dunn.
I can imagine a lot of characters here.
They have some great stuff.
I've seen the trailer to this, and it reminded me of the trailer of the Irish pub in that sense. There, it's just talking heads about whatever the thing is. In that case, the pubs. In this case, being old. And that's fine. I wasn't a big fan of the Irish pub. Wouldn't you move beyond the twee bit, send it to America?
This
isn't really that much behind it.
This
worries me a little bit. Now, it could be good.
But it could be frightening twee.
Yeah, and I'm a little worried. But it could be good, and it could be better. I would imagine it's better than the Irish pub, which really divides me. But we'll see.
Then, last film of the week is Our Colin.
Colin Farrell in Solace.
Yes.
Is this playing anywhere?
Can you imagine if this came out in like 2002, it would be like the biggest movie of the autumn.
Holy God. I've just looked this up.
Yeah, Anthony Hopkins, Colin Farrell. Okay, Jeffrey Dean Morgan.
Abby Cornish.
Yeah.
He was shot 2 years ago and has been left on the shelf.
Right. So. One of those.
It doesn't have an American release date yet, I believe.
Wow.
Nor will it once as late.
Yeah.
Wow.
Colin Farrell and Anthony Hopkins in a serial killer film. If you released this in 2002, this would be amazing.
This is your kind of flip side of your Morgan Freeman, Ashley Judd era.
Because you had A Walk Among the Tombstones with Liam Neeson a little while ago, which was a serial killer film that was so aware that serial killers are so 90s that it closed on a shot of the Twin Towers. As if to say, just to be sure we know what we're doing.
Well, that's because so much of it is set in parts of New York that you wouldn't recognise, so that they needed to draw back.
It's enjoyable nonsense of A Walk Among the Tombstones.
Let me just read the plot synopsis.
Yeah, the plot synopsis is brilliant.
A psychic works with the FBI in order to hunt down a serial killer.
But hold on, now knowing the cast, right? Anthony Hopkins and Colin Farrell, right? So who's playing who? Come on, lay it down.
Psychic has to be Hopkins.
I guess
so.
Jeffrey Dean Morgan is playing an agent.
I was surprised. I thought Colin Farrell would be your better young.
Hopkins is drifting off.
Well, the agents are Jeffrey Dean Morgan and Abby Cornish. Yeah. So that leaves Colin Farrell as
the serial killer.
I like Farrell a lot.
I do too.
But he turns up in a lot of dross, bless him.
Yeah, but something tells me this isn't going to beat The Lobster if you're looking for Colin Farrell.
Nobody's going to be going at Solace at the end of the game.
Yes, all being well.
Very jealous.
That said, though, it's out about 3 days later, so don't be.
Oh, okay. Great.
And
that's a pop-up.
There, we'll leave it for this week.
Oh, my God. A last one in.
He pulls it out.
A lobster is a pot boiler.
Very nice.
And on that note, that'll do.
Oh, thank goodness.
That'll do, Pig. That'll do.